It's fun to be inquisitive. Be nosy. Stick to your passion. Find out more for yourself. Quest is fun. Join me, Tristan Pang, on a journey of inspiration. Welcome to Youth Voices.
Hello everyone, welcome to my show. This is your host Tristan Pang on Planet FM 104.6, Youth Voices. Great to have you here. My featured guest today is Andy Liu.
Let's talk.
Andy was born in Palmerston North and is now a PhD candidate in biomechanics at the University of Auckland. He also fences 3 to 5 times a week. Fencing is not his only pastime, he is also a big fan of strategic board games and card games. We share the same interests. Something that interests me is his passion in growing things. He grows vegetables in his CBD apartment balcony. And now Andy is with me at the 95B studio. And again, thank you to 95B FM for lending me a studio for recording. Welcome to my show, Andy.
Thanks for inviting me, Tristan.
So can you give us some tips of growing our own food in our garden or in the balcony?
Well, most people know how to grow food in a garden, so I'll speak a bit more about a balcony in particular. Most balconies are windy and the soil dries out quite quickly, so standing the pots and trays or buckets of water can help. Those plants with tap roots or tubers are more resilient to drought, so when you forget to water them, they won't die straight away. Plants with both tap roots and edible leaves are great because you can keep stripping off the leaves, although your harvest off the tap root might be affected. But that's fine because the leaves are more nutritious than the roots anyway. It's better value, probably, to grow turnips, beetroot and kumara for the leaves than it is to grow them for their roots, especially since the roots can easily be bought in a supermarket quite cheaply, but the leaves cannot.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for the growing tips, Andy. And now my next question is that I don't think we will save that much money by growing our own food, and we can easily buy kind of organic vegetables and fruits from the supermarkets. So why do you like to grow your own stuff?
Well, supermarkets and market gardeners emphasise consistency over diversity. It's understandable why farms mass-producing crops would prefer crops which consistently ripen or flower all at the same time, which those are all at once instead of over a longer period of time. And they're all the same size, the same shape and everything. It makes harvesting and processing the crops really a lot easier. On the other hand, if you have some more variation in your crops, it allows you to select promising new ones which might be better adapted to your local conditions, or with new features better suited to what you as an individual most prefer instead of what the farmers most prefer. Plant breeding is often done by research institutes, but those research institutes probably prioritise selection of varieties which better suit mass production instead of home production, especially if those research institutes are funded by levies paid by large farms and those in charge of our taxes. They probably prioritise them over the home gardener. They might think things with tougher flesh might ship more easily, things which have more water weigh more, because obviously you pay by weight instead of paying by nutrient content. So those are all reasons why you might want to grow your own. So I also have some other reasons, which are they might actually not stock things which are hard to ship, but if they actually do stock them, they'll stock them for a higher price to reflect the cost of shipping and storing. The price of a thing, anything, reflects how it's produced, how it's shipped or stored. It's like how you'd pay more for courier post in a polystyrene box with an ice pack compared to an ordinary parcel post. If you grow them yourself, you don't have to ship them, obviously.
Yep.
Another reason is actually for the country, for national employment. If something's expensive due to high labour costs, that means there are other things trying to compete for those workers. And enough competition so that the vegetable growers have to pay them in order to make them grow vegetables instead of do something else. If you grow vegetables, you reduce the demand for vegetable growers, so it frees up labour to do other things instead of grow vegetables. On the other hand, it might also increase the number of unemployed people, which can be good or bad depending on what those unemployed people have opportunities to do instead.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point about the unemployment. And yes, indeed, growing our own kind of vegetables and stuff is more sustainable. So next, Andy, you do have a very big balcony for growing all these stuff. So what are you growing now?
Yeah, my balcony is about 1.2 by 4.4 metres and my clothes hanger takes up maybe a third of that. at the moment, I prioritise growing three main things. I'm trying to cross some turnips with some Chinese cabbages. I'm trying to cross some silver beet with some beetroot with cylindrical and yellow roots. and I'm trying to cross some purple flesh kumara with orange and yellow kumara. And I'm also trying to cross some pumpkin with holeless seeds with some courgettes and butternuts, but I'm not sure if that's enough space to do all that. In the past, on my balcony, I've tried recreating Burbank's crosses of peaches and almonds in order to get peaches with edible kernels. And I managed to get the cross-pollination all done, but for some reason the fruit stopped developing and dropped off before they matured. I think it's because the balcony was too windy. I've also tried crossing some seedless grapes with purple flesh grapes and aromatic grapes such as muscats and Gewurztraminer. But I think it also was too windy for those. So that's why I'm sticking to those three vegetables, because they're quite wind-resistant. So a balcony is actually quite good because there aren't any insects pollinating the wrong plants. But it's still going to be limiting. So I'm trying to find people with actual garden space to grow up the second generation of vegetable seeds, since that's when all the recombination happens. It's basically a lotto. The more I can grow out, the more likely it is I can find what I want.
Yeah, indeed. That's very interesting. And actually, we don't even need a very big place to start with. So now let's move on to another topic. We are both in the committee of the University of Auckland Maths Club, where we focus on both maths and strategic board and card games. So in your opinion, how does strategic games relate to maths?
Well, actually, maths isn't necessary for most games. Anyone could move chess pieces or trade material randomly or based on silly reasons like, I don't like their horses, or I want to trade my wood for some sheep. Without evaluating the actions, people are at a disadvantage to those people who can evaluate them. Even cooking, for example, you could consider a game with some strategy. Given the available resources, reach a balance between nutrition, flavour, cost and convenience. Without using completely meaningful quantities, such as daily human nutritional requirements, or withholding information, such as how much of a cancer risk certain mushrooms are, or red meat or alcohol, or spreading false information, such as how much cooler you look when buying overpriced gourmet, authentic American donuts instead of oven-baked Dargaville kumara, it's more likely that people aren't making the most optimal choices and certain players end up profiting in that game at their expense. So if you can quantify and calculate and verify and validate, you're better off. So what we teach in subjects as maths is basically a particular way of organising and processing information. And without reliable information, we might as well be going by things by chance. So there's a story that someone once fed a crowd of thousands with a few loaves of bread and fish, but actually that story doesn't add up. It would be a better choice to invest in sustainable resource production such as potatoes and fishing quotas and infrastructure and legal systems for distributing them fairly, for example.
Very cool. So what's your favourite game?
Well, it depends on the context. My favourite recommendation that I always tell people who haven't played me games before is Settlers of Catan. It's a really good hands-on way of demonstrating high school economics concepts, which all voters over the age of 18 should really understand before they start ticking boxes. For example, these basic things like opportunity cost, supply and demand, comparative advantage, monopolies and cartels. In 5-6 player Catan, sometimes people don't bother trading with the poorer players because richer players can offer more in return. To balance that, the poorer players can cooperate among themselves by threatening to rob people or trade embargo people who break a trade embargo. It illustrates the law, how law works in society and the nature of a state. Basically, there are mutual agreements between people to protect the common interests, which can be broken at any time, not without consequences. I think it's a good thing for young adults to learn by trial and error in a game with relatively little at stake. Experiencing firsthand the results of these choices is quite educational. Catan's not actually my favourite game to play since I've played it so much. The ones I do enjoy are ones with an hourglass involved, such as Ricochet Robots, which I was introduced to when I first joined the club, and a 2-versus-2 version of chess called Transfer, or Bug House, or Crazy House, which I was introduced to at the school chess club. Transfer is the game which I consider most similar to fencing, actually.
Yeah, those are some of my favourite games too. My recent favourite game is actually Captain Sona, which requires teamwork and strategic thinking.
Oh yeah, so that one's really fun.
Yeah, let's play that sometime later. Yeah. And also you mentioned transfer is something similar to fencing, so let's move on to this hobby of yours, fencing. In fact, I know you're sacrificing some of your fencing time to come here onto my show today, so thanks so much for that.
You're welcome.
What makes you fence 3-5 times a day, Andy? Is it a fun game and is it hard to learn?
Well, I guess to answer that question, we'd think about what motivates humans. And broadly speaking, you can use what's called Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which ranks things from your really basic needs to more advanced needs where you've met those basic needs. But at the most basic level is physiological. Well, basically eating, breathing, sleeping, etc. Most good sports give you a healthy body and mind, which you really need. There was a study done on rats which found that most who played on the exercise wheel grew more new brain cells and better blood supply. Now that's quite handy. Now, humans who exercise also tend to not get dementia as easily, which is also quite nice. Healthy people also probably contribute more to themselves and their families and the country and the world in general. And many sorts of exercise are good for that. It's not really fencing specific. Now, on to some other needs. Well, security. Well, financial security is not too bad in that fencing is not that expensive. It's about similar to badminton. It's not as bad as ice hockey. So, as for your personal security, well, having a healthy body, having a sense of distance, timing, staying calm under pressure, well, if you're ever stuck in a combat situation, it's quite useful. You can use an umbrella just like a fencing sword, for example. And plus, the umbrellas is good for keeping off the sun and the rain, which is also good for your health. Now, social needs. Well, fencing clubs, like all clubs, have pretty cool people. Fencing draws a slightly less mainstream audience, I guess. It's probably more similar to those who choose athletics, rowing, or figure skating, or competitive swimming and lifting. But nothing stops you from choosing some more mainstream sports as well, and that's probably good for you as well. Well, self-esteem. Well, success isn't as easily quantifiable with sports where you can get a personal best time or weight. But if you're used to measuring your success by your score, then it can be hard for if you're used to that. But it's not. Well, it's not too bad. The other thing is it's an Olympic sport, so you can feel good that it's an Olympic sport. And also the fact that you can actually fence ex-Olympians, because they tend to keep fencing for years and years after they stop fencing competitively. And even the silver medalist in the last Olympics, he was something like 41 years old or something. Mm. He almost was a gold medalist. That's an interesting bout to watch, the men's epee bout in Rio 2016. Okay, so self-actualization. Well, I think it's just the idea of fencing in general, of two fencers challenging each other to the last point, testing the understanding of the rules and each other, and that's a really cool thing. I think there's a passage from the Bible which is, as iron sharpens iron, so does one person sharpen another. I think fencing hones the body and the mind and helps people be sharper people. And so do board games and other sports, so that's probably why I enjoy them all.
Wow, that's a very clever way to relate fencing with the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Very neat and clear. And finally, my last question is, would you mind to share something inspiring which you have read to our listeners?
Well, I'd like to share a book called Guns, Germs and Steel that I found in my high school library. The author is Jared Diamond. I won't quote from the book directly, but I'll quote a related quote from somewhere. So if you find this quote interesting, you might want to find this book. So the quote goes, "According to our most conservative estimates, the introduction of the potato accounts for approximately one quarter of the growth in old world population and urbanization between 1700 and 1900. That's from an article titled "The Potato's Contribution to Population and Urbanization" by Nun and Chen in 2011.
Fantastic. Yeah, thanks for sharing that with us. And I should let you go now. Hope you enjoy the rest of the day and happy fencing.
Thank you.
So that's it from me. Thanks for listening. Please email me at youthvoicesnz@gmail.com and visit my website www.questisfun.org.nz/youthvoices. That's QUEST-IS-FUN.org.nz/youthvoices. So see you next month. Bye. Join me again for another exciting program next month on the first Wednesday at 2:10 p.m. or listen anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/youthvoices or listen to the archive on my website www.questisfun.org.nz/youthvoices. Youth Voices.